This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is useful.
Welcome to another episode of Equity Mates, a podcast that follows our journey of investing. Whether you're an absolute beginner or approaching Warren Buffett status, our aim is to help break down your barriers from beginning to dividend. My name is Bryce, and as always, I am joined by my equity buddy, Ren. How are you going?
I'm very good, Bryce. Very excited for this episode. We've got a returning favorite, someone that the Equity Mates community will be familiar with.
Yes.
But we're going to be looking at him in a completely different light.
We are, yes. Usually, well, firstly, welcome to the show, Matt Leibowitz.
Oh, no, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
For those of you who haven't heard any of Matt's episodes before, he is the founder and CEO of Stake, the platform that allows Australians to invest in US stocks. And Matt, you are one of the pioneers of bringing the US markets to Australia. And that is going to be the theme of today's episode, because usually we have you on to chat about all things stocks over in the US, but this time we're going to be looking at it through the lens of the CEO mm-hmm. series and how you've built Stake, some of the, I guess, your thoughts on the current broker landscape, and then also how you're trying to build Stake for the future. So looking forward to it.
Yeah. And you say that Stake allows Australians to invest in the US markets. We should actually say that Stake allows Australians, English people, Brazilians, and New Zealanders.
That's
in
right.
The US market.
It's
so
global
expansion, which I'm sure we'll get to. But Matt, we like to start these CEO series by hearing the company leaders describe their companies in their own words. So to kick us off today, how would you describe Stake?
Ambition. Okay. Probably one word. The ambition of our customers, the ambition of our staff, and our partners, ultimately. We try a line. The three we're built on, four major tenants, customers, staff, partners, and our own shareholders, and all of them come with different ambitions, but they're ambitious. So we want to make sure that customers have the opportunity to really make something themselves, and that flows through all the way we run our business. So yeah, I think someone will say in the office progress, someone will say ambition. I think it's really about ambition, and then progress follows that. So if I was going to pick one word, it'll be ambition.
And so what was the journey of founding Stake? You were previously a professional in the markets, trading at Optiva. You're a partner over there.
Yeah, that's right.
And now you're a CEO of a broker startup. What was the journey of founding? And I guess, have there been any particularly tough moments on your entrepreneurial journey that you've learned from?
Sure. So even before I was a trader and then obviously working at Optiva, I was a lawyer way back in the day. So I did law and finance here in Sydney. I grew up in Perth. I moved over right when university started, which was pretty tough in itself, moving to another city, and Australian universities are not like in America where you sort of live on campus and have a community. So I found it pretty tough when I first moved to Sydney, but that was a good experience anyway, just learning and growing. And then I went into a law firm, Allens. We've got a common thread there, Bryce.
Yes.
So it's Allens Linklaters now. It's a large law firm. I was there for 5 years, 3.5 as a lawyer, and then I was paralegaling while I was at university before that. And then my maths probably got me into law school, and I really just loved the energy of the stock market. And I remember turning up to Optiva on for an interview, and I was there while I was at Allen's in a suit and a tie, as you do. I don't know if they still wear those, but maybe, maybe not. And I rolled up, and there was a dude rolling around on his skateboard with literally no shoes on, literally in this thing. And I'm like, I really got to get rid of my tie. So I rolled my tie up, put it in my jacket. I was still in the jacket, so I was well overdressed. It was a bunch of math tests and a few interviews. And then my journey began. I absolutely loved it. I remember doing that interview process and just being like, wow, this is what I want to be doing. And it was an amazing time. It was 2007. Sort of the bull market, particularly in Hong Kong equities, as we're Optiva focused, and Aussie equities, right before the GFC, that the dawn was sort of around the corner of the GFC. And it's just a great place to learn, get exposure to really, really smart people. You know, working at Allen's was amazing as well. Just learned other skills, and it was a professional organization that had been around for hundreds of years, or maybe, I don't know, it was like a Melbourne firm anyway. Like, it had a history and had good structures. And then Optiva was just like my foray into the markets. It was, I wouldn't call it the wild, wild west, but we started with 50 people, and when I left, we had, I think, close to 350. Wow. In Sydney. So it was, and that was just part of the one, that was the APAC office. So it was just, great ride. I got to go to Chicago, run the index trading team there for US equities. So that was the Russell, the S&P 500, the NASDAQ, the VIX, that complex, which is just a huge, it's like a behemoth of a market, which is obviously the inspiration for Stake. And then I came back and just realized just how far away we were from the market, not physically, but how hard it was for people to access those opportunities. When I was in the States, like, Netflix had listed, it was on its tear. Tesla listed in 2010. Towards the end of my journey there, Facebook had just listed. Apple was on its tear. Groupon, I don't know if you remember that company, was a Chicago-based company. So that was interesting to follow. And just the excitement and energy around the stock market. So I just wanted to make sure we could, Australia had its amazing potential for, people that have that access, but it was more for novelty than anything, and it didn't need to be the way. So just jumped in head first, and you try and make something happen, and you learn along the way. But the journey's been nothing but a straight line, in terms of growth. But it's been a massive roller coaster in terms of emotions as well. But that's what you're in for. So,
So I think you started. Were you the first in Australia to offer $0 brokerage?
We were, yeah. It had happened in the US, obviously. There was actually a group before Robinhood, but they didn't make it. That was really interesting. Everyone thinks that Robinhood was the first, but they weren't. I think they were called, what were they called? I'll have to get back to you on that one. You can pass that detail on, but they're obviously history now. So Robinhood's considered the pioneer, but I think what history's written by the winners.
That's it.
We were. Our whole thing was really about access and to give people that experience as if you're in Sydney or San Fran, it shouldn't make a difference ultimately. So we were. And it was tough at the beginning because people didn't quite understand it, but it's become sort of commonplace. And in a way, it's sort of validated the market and validated the product.
So what was it like, early days? You've had this idea, you've started this company, you're going to do $0 brokerage, you're entering a market that's dominated, I assume at that stage, still by the Comsecs of the world. What was the entrepreneurial journey like, trying to break into that market and try and convince people that $0 brokerage could be a thing?
Yeah, I think price is one aspect. With financial services, and it's different, you've seen lending businesses, it's not really about trust ultimately. With a lending business like an Afterpay or a Zip, you're giving somebody something. So it's very different from when they're investing in you. So Stake was about creating trust and really understanding the customer's needs. It's really tough. If I had my time again, would I do it again? Probably not. I really mean that. I was in a really amazing situation, Optiva. I was a senior partner there when I left, and would I do it again?
Is this what your wife tells you?
No, this is what I tell you. She's really proud of what we've built, and I'm really proud. But, I don't think people – I think startups are sort of glorified in a way. I'm not allowed to swear in here, I'll just say it's something tough.
This is a bit worrying given that we've just quit our jobs. Yeah.
Cushy corporate jobs.
No, but the growth you get from starting a business and taking something from an idea to, zero to one's the hardest bit in any business. And Yeah, once you start, like, it's a lot more enjoyable now. It sounds really weird than it was at the beginning. It's exciting at the beginning, but it's very, very tough. And you're just getting things thrown at you straight away, you know, things that you don't just take for granted. You know, like, there are just structures in organizations that you don't even need to think about, but you need to think about everything when you start saying from, as you guys are finding out now. But
yeah,
it's amazing when you start. And that's why I'm a massive fan of people that go and do their own things, because they're the ones that are taking the risk to go and, you know, we employ 50 people now. Like, that's amazing in itself. And you guys will get there too, which is super exciting.
We're currently at one, so 49 to go.
Yeah. Almost soon to be two.
Unless we count, then
yeah,
it's
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely you count.
We're contractors.
Yeah.
So I guess sort of back off Alex's comment there, one of the biggest sort of questions that we had from our community early on was around how does Stake make money and are they legit?
Mm-hmm.
You had a pretty small team at the time. How do you go about changing the consumer mindset when it comes to convincing people?
And I think maybe for people who still have that question, maybe can you answer it as well?
Sure. Look, it's always a valid question. It's important to know how a business makes money. So, I mean, I can answer that straight away and I can talk about the journey. So Stake makes money in three ways. We make it on the FX transfer when you move money from your local currency to US dollars, whether that be Aussie, New Zealand, pound, or REI in Brazil. And then back again. We don't make it on like other brokers do on every trade. So other brokers charge you an FX fee every time you trade and they make you convert. So they don't let you hold USD, which to us is not acceptable. So that's the first way. We make it on the interest sitting, the idle cash sitting on accounts, which is obviously zero at the moment, the interest rate.
Yeah, tough to rely on that.
We really make it in two ways, but I'm gonna give you the third. I'm gonna give you the third, just so we're, you know, people are aware when rates do go up. And the last way is we make it on the premium account, Stake Black. So people that want more sophistication, or they want analyst ratings, or price targets, or full data regarding, you know, our company's quarterly reporting, so they can just, you know, level up if they want and just take their investing to another level. So yeah, it's really three clear ways. And as I said, what we do is we've just rolled a US experience out to people outside the US. So in the US, you'd have the same services without the FX ultimately. So you don't pay anything to trade in the US. Why should you not have that experience in Australia or New Zealand or wherever you are? Now, the other question about the beginning. So that's more of a business question. It just takes time. You know, I'm actually very close friends now with one of our first customers.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, it's just, you just have to speak to customers, understand their needs, what they're about. You've got an idea as a business, but until the rubber hits the road, it doesn't really matter. So it's all about just the customer, and it still is all about the customer. If we're fully focused on our customers and speaking to them, and the most important thing you can do is just understand what they're about, what their needs are. You know, what are their questions? As you said, you know, how do they make money? How do you make money? How can I trust you? Those are the sort of situations where you just need to actually, you know, I was doing that at the beginning and I still do it. I love getting on the customer service channel, and I love going and speaking to customers, and that inspires me to, you know, push Stake to another level. So it's always the way, and it will always remain the way.
If you had your time again, other than not doing it.
I say that sort of flippantly.
I know what you mean. You know, trying to change the consumer mindset and convince them that $0 brokerage is a thing. What would you have done differently? You know, everyone, you know, when you start a startup, you're always trying to get as much, I guess, traction and trust as fast as possible. What would you have done differently?
Oh, there's so many mistakes we made, and I'll be totally transparent because that's what we've learned. We just, you know, it's all about focus. We know we had right at the beginning, we offered gift cards.
I remember that.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't what we were about ultimately. We were about giving people access to the US market. We thought that was a great way to give people that wanted to share that journey, but we actually hadn't built the platform yet to go and, well, we had built it, but we actually hadn't built the name and the brand and the association of what we're about. So it's all about focus. It's all about just being laser sharp. What is the most essential thing your customer needs? And our customer needed access to opportunity, and gift cards weren't part of it. So we scrapped it. And that was an amazing decision we made. People still ask about it.
I know. Someone actually asked me recently, can you gift stocks to someone else? And I thought back about your gift cards.
I think there's a way we can do it again. We're sort of back in discussions with others, but it's more about actually gifting them the experience of investing.
Yeah.
Not the actual stock itself. Yeah. So, look, there's just little things we're thinking about. But as I said, it's not the most essential thing right now for our customers. There are other things, but We'll leave that to the imagination.
So, we don't want this to be like we're grilling you. How do you make money? And now, yeah. I think you talked about the customer service and the customer feedback, and obviously, Stake has been front and center recently because of this GameStop stuff. So I guess let's start at a high level. What was your experience of the GameStop saga, and how did that interaction between what was going on in the US, what was going on in the Stake customer base, and what was going on behind closed doors at Stake? How did that all sort of interact?
Yeah, so I've never seen anything quite like it, I'll be totally honest. It was more than about investing. It was quite political, so that was quite stressful, to be honest. I'm very much libertarian in my views, that people have the right to do whatever they want, buy, sell. If they want to buy tobacco stocks, they want to go buy weed stocks, they want to go buy EV stocks, they want to go buy a Vanguard ETF, that is your absolute right, and we do not tell people how or what to invest in, and they should be able to express themselves in any way. So I'm very much on the side of, if people want to buy a GameStop or sell it or do whatever they want to do, that is their right. So for me, I'm totally with that, the ability to exercise that right, but it was pretty tough. I mean, there are certain, the financial markets are a complex beast. There's a lot of players. The NASDAQ went to, I think, digital in, I think it's like the late 60s. I mean, this is, a long time ago, like 50-odd years ago. It's more than 50 years ago. So there's a lot of legacy there. And, that means that there's a lot of things that need to happen and need to be absolutely perfect to execute a trade ultimately. And unfortunately, the system just wasn't able to handle what was happening. And, we're the front end, and that's what customers see. So we receive a lot of that feedback. And ultimately, I understand their frustration, and we learn from it. We get better. We have to, and that's all we can do.
I think for people who only did see the front end, who were Stake customers who couldn't trade GameStop, or for people who just heard about it on Twitter and stuff like that, can you explain what actually broke down in that,
sure,
in that process?
Yeah, so I just want to reiterate, they could trade. We had a lot of people that executed orders. We were totally, hopefully, really transparent the whole way through. There were issues during market because of the volume and that were happening both downstream and on our side. So, but we were totally transparent. If you wanted to place a limit order or an order before market, you could have placed an order. In the same way, I think that some of the older school platforms were, you can't place orders during the market, but with Stake, you could have done that, and you could have actually placed orders before and set all your levels before the market opened, and you would have got executed accordingly. So I just want to clarify that. Yeah. The issue I think you're probably referring to is when the GameStop was set to sell only, where you couldn't buy more. And now, we are not the actual executing broker in the US, and I don't think any Australian or really any international brokerage would actually, maybe Interactive Brokers are actually their own executing broker in the US.
And so just for people who aren't familiar with that, that means you receive the order and then you pass it on to someone who actually executes the trade in market over in the US.
Yeah, so we're basically the layer the customer sees, and those instructions are passed directly through, the same message is passed through to the executing broker dealer. So we're sort of at the mercy of what they allow in terms of stocks. And, we fight tooth and nail in a respectful way for more stocks. As I said, we're pushing really hard now to get more and more stocks for our customers that want to access those. So, but at the end of the day, we have to respect that partner. They had capital constraints. So what happened? It's really complicated. I can try go into it, but so there's certain things called the DTCC, which is the Depository Trust and Clearing Corporation, which then sets levels for how much margin you need to hold against stock. And because of the T plus two, as I said, it gets complicated. Yeah. So, I don't want to give you a lecture here.
Too long didn't read.
I needed that coffee that I didn't get. I ordered you guys two coffees and they didn't make mine. So this is why I'm a bit scattered.
So, long story short, there was a period of a few days where it was difficult for people to access the Stake platform and execute trades, even though in the background it certainly seemed possible. There was, and then also, the executing brokers over in the States were making decisions that were equally affecting what you could offer the customers. Yeah. From sort of like a CEO hat on, how do you sort of plan for moments like that? And has it made you reconsider business model or anything like that?
Well, I just want to go back, like the executing brokers also got downstream partners. Yeah, so a lot of things outside their control as well. That's why I talk about that legacy. So I've got to respect the fact that there's just things that I can't see.
Yeah.
Much like our customers see us, we see that executing broker. I'm sure there are things that go downstream. So I've got to be sensitive to that. In terms of planning, you can't plan for situation. I don't think I ate for 2 weeks, to be honest. I remember that weekend. That's why he asked me if I'd lost weight.
Yeah, well, you're looking trim.
Look, you don't want those situations too often.
No.
It was really stressful. It wasn't a moment that I would ask for again.
Yeah.
You know, I just felt for our customers. I felt for our staff. It's just an unfortunate situation. You just have to roll with it a bit. And my role as the CEO is to face up to the music, ultimately, and also provide support to staff, because ultimately the staff are the ones that are also in there, in the thick of it, trying to solve problems, dealing with partners, dealing with customers, dealing with me. and all you can do as a CEO is just try to be as strong as possible, even though you don't feel it on the inside. And it was stressful on my family as well, and those things happen. But that's where you grow. And I can't, if I look back, that's something I wouldn't change, because we're going to get better from it. Mm. We learn a lot. The customers understood where we came from, and you know, even you guys gave the feedback about our response during the, you know, the process and what was happening was, you know, like that drives us to be better. So look, it's just about, as I was saying, staying as strong and calm as possible, even though on the inside you don't really feel like that.
Mm. So you said there were, you know, you learn a lot and you're gonna get better from it. I guess what have you put any changes into the business?
Yeah.
Or like what are you gonna implement from that period?
Yeah, I think it's learning a little bit more about how our partners, like I feel like I've got good knowledge of the US trading infrastructure from my time there, but it's going into more detail. Like I'm a lot more involved personally now in order management, and I'm putting a lot of pressure on our partner to give me a lot of information, and I've really sunk my teeth into that. Something I really love, actually, just going into the detail again how orders work, and really just fighting for better controls for order management, because there was a big issue there that we were feeling downstream because of what they were building on their side. So I'm really just challenging a lot of those things. So that's a product specific thing. From an infrastructure thing, we've just put a bunch of time into, you know, scaling and, you know, as I said, making sure that partners downstream, and we're dealing with exceptions that happen up. I don't know how much you guys understand the technology, like I'm learning as we go a little bit, but there's certain messages that get sent and they have impacts on our technology, and just dealing with those in a more, I guess, graceful way would probably be how a technologist describes it. And then just scaling out the team. So we've been lucky enough to get more staff in. We've invested in, you know, just more clarity for our staff about, you know, what are the most essential things that a customer needs. And it's about access. You know, when you have these situations, it's not about feature sets. It's about just being really effing good at one thing, and that thing for us is access. So that's where the focus has been, and will and continue to be. And it's just it's sharpened that focus for us.
Yeah, nice.
We will just take a quick break to hear from our sponsors, and then get back into it.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So, Matt, there is no doubt that our competition is heating up in the space. New brokers coming to town, what feels like almost every week.
I feel like we said we weren't going to grill him, but now we're going into another part of it.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, you know.
Fine.
He knows what he's in for.
Yeah, but it's all about the growth, right? Yeah, I'll be stronger at the end of this.
Equity Mate's toughest interview in finance.
I mean, it's no doubt that access is getting easier for retail investors. It's getting cheaper. You see what's happening in the States, and there's a bit of a race to the bottom when it comes to fees, and it feels like there's sort of something happening like that over here in Australia. Where do you sort of see stakes sitting in the broker landscape at the moment? And we always like to get an idea of what the CEO thinks their sort of major competitive advantages are.
Yeah, look, it's a really good question. I can't really focus too much on the competition. That's going to come naturally. If you deliver a good job, people will see an opportunity as well. So I sort of take that as a little bit of a compliment. But at the same time, like, our focus is just on our customers, what they need. I'm head down listening to them. We're aware of competitors, but it's not our focus at all. And you can't respond. You got to run your own race a bit. You know, I think what's at stake, if you think about what we are a place in which people can move forward. And as I said, I talk about that word ambition right at the beginning, and we represent that for our customers. And I think our customers recognize that when we do something and we make a mistake, we own up to it and we learn from it. And we always push to do things in a great way, in a more creative way. And we think a little bit differently to the rest of the pack. As I said, we're not necessarily only about price. We're about a lot of things, but the one thing we are about is ambition and representing that, and that will always be, you know, our go-to. And I think our customers, the ones that are aware of what we're about and know about our journey and know what they get with us, they see that, and that will always be our point of difference. Ultimately, the world doesn't need another broker. You know? It's a utility, yeah, ultimately.
Yeah. Hear that? Anyone trying to come to Australia? Yeah, exactly. We don't need you.
Yeah. You're not wanted. I think it's good. It drives us to be better, and it makes us more aware, and as I said, sharpens our focus on what's important. But our whole thing will be about access to opportunity, whether that be, you know, in US equities. We've started obviously our SMSF platform, so people can, you know, Your generation, my generation, can open up an SMSF in just a few clicks. And, you know, we've brought I think ASIC said the costs, or the ATO said the costs were like average of $15,000 to have it set up and administered. We've got it down to well below 1,000. So just breaking down barriers in a really good way, using technology, understanding what the customer's needs are, so customers can go and grab opportunities, and we'll always be that. So I think our customers sort of see that we're a little bit different in a way that we're just not about trading or investing, we're actually about them and what they want to do with their lives.
I want to put a pin in that SMSF conversation because I want to come back to that in a second. But one more question on the broker landscape. So
Sure. You
were in the States when, you know, the Robinhood, the Ameritrade, all of that, like, were racing to the bottom in terms of cost. So I guess you saw some of it play out before over there. How do you expect it to play out in Australia? Like, what's the end game here?
It feels like you got some inside information about this question.
Oh, I don't. Honestly, we're just fascinated
from
watching.
From me.
Like, you know, even in 2021, I think there's like three new entrants that have come in that are trying to do low cost.
Yeah.
Bloody all through summer, superheroes been on every bus and train that you walk past. You know, you guys are growing, like ComSec and stuff are investing.
We saw you at the MCG last night, didn't we?
Yeah.
What? Steak doing
that? Steak on the MCG. Yeah.
I made it to the AFL finally.
True.
Look, I couldn't do it as a player. So,
so yeah, for us, we're just looking at it being like, what's the end game here?
Yeah, I just watch this space is all I can tell you.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a hint for what's coming.
Okay. All right, we'll put a pin in that.
That's like a dartboard, that one.
But you mentioned the SMSF feature there.
Sure.
And so for people who are unfamiliar, basically if you want to have a self-managed super fund but you don't want to deal with all the admin and all the costs that comes
that's
with
right.
it, Stake are offering to take all that off your hands.
That's right. So you look at Stake's customer, it's 32 years old on average. Works in the city, professional generally, and they've probably thought about having an SMSF, and there's something about having your own SMSF, but it's just been out of reach because it's just been made to be like exactly the same way US equities were when we started. It's just clunky, it's slow, it's complicated. You're told you don't need one because the super funds will make it cheaper and easier, but that's because it was just so bloody hard to, you know, I've told you who my accountant is because I've shared the information with you. I was getting, you know, I was paying, I think, $4,000 a year for my super to be just administered. You know, Stake's been able to just use technology, and we've brought in Chris, who's an SMSF expert, and do it, you know, at a quarter of that cost. So I love my accountant. He's a lovely guy. But at the same time, you know, if there's a better way to do things, we'll always push for that. And, you know, we're in beta now. We've got, you know, the VIP list of customers that are testing and helping us nurture and develop the product. And it's just about breaking down those barriers. And people that wanted to have an SMSF or would be thinking about it when they're sort of 45 can now start thinking about it when they're 30 and be like, well, I don't need to have that 300 grand that everyone tells me I need to have, because actually it's cost effective at 50 grand. And then they can have full control about what they invest in, and they don't need to be limited and just get a PDF statement once every 6 months from their APRA super fund that sort of says, oh, we put an index fund and we took, you know, $150 of fees out.
So, Matt, before we move on to the people and culture and future plans, bit of a shameless plug. If you want to support Equity Mates and also have ambition, as Matt talks about.
Or if you do have ambition.
Or if you do have ambition and want to join the, what, 300,000 traders that are now on stake,
I think
thereabouts.
Yeah, it could be more even.
Head across to hellostake.com. You can sign up there and use the code EquityMates when you sign up, and you'll go in the draw to win one of three free stocks that are currently with Stake. I think it's what are they?
Nike, Dropbox, and GoPro. Is that right?
Yeah, I was looking at Dropbox. I'm like, wow, this thing's really turned around.
So yeah, use Equity Mates to sign up and fund your account, and then yeah, they'll throw a free stock your way. Pretty decent way to start your investing journey. But moving on to people and culture, Matt, we love hearing about how CEOs are trying to build that, because when we speak to professional investors, it's always about the management, and it's really difficult to get information on management. So do you have a leadership philosophy as a CEO, and how are you trying to build, I guess, the culture at Stake?
Sure. So yes, absolutely. I do have a philosophy, and it changes as I learn more.
Yeah.
And hopefully get better. It's all about the people. I'm not, you know, everyone says that, but you don't really realize it until you're 50 people deep and you need people managing people. It's all about the people, and we're really lucky. I feel, you know, I'm so proud. Yeah, you know, when the other day we hired a new staff person for customer service, and I called him up and I said, congratulations, we're going to make you an offer. I'm just so excited that you're joining us, and to be able to make those calls, and he's like, oh, I so want to be part of this journey. You know, I was so excited when I walk into your office. The people are amazing, and that what makes me so proud is that when I see people that want to be part of our journey and they elevate us even further, and you have to nurture that. And like, we've been lucky enough that we've had great people from the beginning that have wanted to be part of what we're building. But it takes effort. It takes real effort. And I think my philosophy is just be yourself. I feel like I'm approachable. I'll own things when I get it wrong, and that's a lot of the time. And I want people to never feel afraid of making a mistake. I want them to try stuff. I want them to throw caution to the wind, but responsibly. And learn from it. It's about making decisions relatively quickly. And if you get it wrong, own it, move on, learn, repeat, and just make sure you keep making better decisions, but you feel that you can make them. No one wants to be in an organization where you're stifled and people say no. They want their own level of accountability. So you've just got to give them space to grow. And I feel that has to come from the top. And my philosophy is very much about you've got the ability to do anything, and I've got to make sure that people actually believe that internally as well.
Yeah, it's a good philosophy. Great thing about doing this series and being able to ask this question is we can really just pick and choose the best bits from everyone else's leadership philosophies.
Well, your staff have won.
It's all about the people.
It starts now. Yeah. Honestly, it starts now. And, you know, when you hire someone else, the person they're going to be talking to the most is your other employee. Mm. So you've just got to set that
standard.
No
coffee room, buddy. Water cooler chat for now, employees.
We don't have a water cooler.
Yeah.
True. We need a water cooler.
You did offer me a coffee, though, after mine got left at the coffee shop.
So, Matt, we mentioned that Stake is in four countries at the moment, the UK, Brazil, Australia, and New Zealand. I guess, how's that expansion gone? Like, have you learn anything from entering these different markets? I guess people may be confused by the geographic spread.
Sure.
So maybe why those four countries?
Yeah, I mean, Australia and New Zealand makes sense, right? My co-founder's British, Dan. So, and we always saw the opportunity to be that US outside the US, like really about offering US equities, the world's biggest market, to people outside the US, because it's difficult. In the UK, believe it or not, they get charged, even the new brokers are charging FX on every trade.
Really?
It drives me insane. So we think there's a big opportunity to go and shake things up there. Like, it's just, for me, it's unacceptable. So that's, and with Dan being the being British, it makes a lot of sense to have a business over there. Brazil's a really interesting one. That's probably the one that stands out. So Stake never really had intentions to go to Latin America. Obviously, we wanted to be global, but it was really about just nailing it in Australia. But my chairman, who's become our chairman over time, actually started and built Brazil's first online trading platform. He's an amazing guy. So he's my mentor, ultimately, and I'm happy to admit it. He sits next to me every day. He's become an exec member of the team now, so he's in there. And yeah, he said in early 2000s, he built and sold Brazil's first online trading platform to Santander Bank, ultimately. It got acquired. And he came across to Australia. It's an amazing story. You should actually have him on because he's far more interesting than me. He sailed for a year with his four kids across from Sao Paulo to actually ended the boat in Auckland. It's based in Auckland and then moved to Australia just as an adventurer. I remember when he was at university, he left Cornell. He did his master's at Cornell and he'd never ridden a motorbike, just bought a motorbike and drove it all the way back down to so just to have people like that. And the opportunity in Brazil is enormous. You know, it's same time zone as America. It's a very similar situation, you know, in terms of the types of companies that are listed on their local exchange, the Bovespa. And it matches our mission of really giving people access no matter where you are. And they need it just as much as Australians do. And, you know, to have someone who's done it before and can teach you and you can learn off, it made sense to place a little bit of a bet in Brazil and it's paying off. So we're really, really happy with that.
How's your Portuguese?
Terrible. you know, it's amazing when you speak to the staff there, they apologize for the English. And I'm like, you have got nothing to apologize for. If we had this in Portuguese, I'd be staring blankly at you. It's just an amazing journey learning about different cultures, different regulators, different market structures, different needs of customers. And look, I said right at the beginning I wouldn't do it again, but when I get to talk about what I've learned over the journey, I'd definitely do it again. Mm. So, yeah, those are the things that really just amaze me every day.
I imagine that's probably the hardest part. Like you think about an online tech business and you think, well, you know, tech can be global very quickly, but I feel every country, different set of regulations, like the opportunity to scale would be constrained by that. Like it would be difficult navigating it every time.
Yeah. And that's why I say it's all about the people. You need to put the right person in place and the right person needs to want to come and work for you. So, and that's really hard when you've got nothing in a market. When we're lucky to have great people in all of our markets, you know, there's different challenges in each market and you need to be dynamic and you need to have that attitude that I'm going to make quick decisions, but if I get it wrong, I'm going to quickly make another one and see if that's the right one and learn from it. And if you've got that overarching philosophy in your business, you will find a way to succeed. And we just got to maintain that.
Speaking of succeeding and expansion, what does the next sort of 12 months hold for Stake that you're able to reveal?
Or that you want to reveal for the first time?
True, true. Yeah. That's a chance.
I have to check with Brian, my CMO. I'm not even the boss of my own business or the boss of my own home. There's a lot. You know, we're really focusing on Australia, I'll say that, and New Zealand as well. You know, very similar markets in terms of culture and customers and needs. So you can imagine what that's going to be. I won't say anything explicit, but I'll say it in crypt. There's a lot to be done in Australia. But really, as I said, it's about what we learned from the whole situation at the end of January. It's just about getting better at what we're doing and making it really good, improving the front end, the back end, the infrastructure, building out the team, the customer service team. It's just at every level, it's just about improving. It sounds cliched, but it's just the truth.
Yeah.
But there will be some pretty interesting products being rolled out this year, but it's all about having that base done first. So it's making it like we just released bank transfers so people, you know, could fund more easily. Little things that just make the experience better, but those little things matter. And just being laser sharp on making those, making it a great experience for people to access the market.
Yeah. So we're eternal optimists here at Equity Mates, but with everything, there are risks. What are some of the biggest risks for your business right now?
Oh, yeah, they're very good questions. Look, I'm also an eternal optimist. So, you know, I need probably a bit more time to think. There's no one big risk. I think there's always execution is everything. Like I don't mean that from trade execution. That is everything as well for it. But executing our business as our plan. I think if we focus too much on the competition, that's actually a risk. It's actually just, what are we about? We're about our customers, giving them the ability to make something more of themselves, to make their mark on the world. And if we don't focus on that, that is probably the biggest risk. It's about understanding what they need, what they like, what they don't like, what we can improve on, and that needs to drive us. And if you lose sight of that, that's a massive risk, because then you end up just building everything that they didn't want, and you end up being like the players that you're trying to disrupt. And I just don't want that to happen. I'm too proud a person to allow that to happen at stake.
So, Matt, it's been a really enjoyable conversation. We appreciate your transparency with everything from, you know, looking back on where you started, 5 years ago with Stake, and the challenges that you faced, but also, I guess, the successes. If you were to sort of think about Stake in 10 years' time, yeah, what does success look like for you and for Stake?
Yeah, I mean, it depends how you measure it. You can measure it on how many customers you have. I don't think that's the best measure for us, the type of business we want to be. I think it's just about the satisfaction our customers get from our product and our experience and our brand. And how do they, when they talk about Stake, do they say, yeah, I've been using Stake for 5 years and it's like I look at it every day and I'm proud that I'm a customer? That to me would be success. So yeah, if in 5 and 10 years time, if people are still saying that, like, I'll be over the moon.
Will you be CEO in 10 years?
In some ways I hope not, but then I hope so as well. if there are people that come that are better than you that can take your job, you've done an amazing job. It's not because I've not delivered. It's because someone is better than me at it. That would be amazing.
Do a Bezos and then just sit on there. Well, he's MD now, isn't he?
Or chairman.
Slightly different scale of business.
Hey, I think same you guys deal. Can get there. Yeah. You just need to find your next business, Amazon Web Services. Yeah.
Well, Matt, as I said, it has been a pleasure. You've certainly helped us on our entrepreneurial journey and are as much a mentor to us as some of the people that you have in your business as well. So, we've really appreciated the conversation, and it's been refreshing to get a bit of an insight into how you think about being a CEO and growing a business rather than just what's hot and what's not over in the States at the moment.
Although we do want to keep up to date with what's hot and what's not in future.
I think everything's hot right now, isn't it?
A massive thank you, and it's always a pleasure.
No, I loved it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Matt.
Equity Mates Investing Podcast is a product of Equity Mates Media. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Equity Mates Investing Podcast are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the Equity Mates website, where you can find ASIC resources and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media and the hosts of Equity Mates Investing Podcast acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.